Welcome to episode 202 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live October 23rd, 2020. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a different topic or news and how it relates to you. In the McBroken episode, Scott and Ben talk about a way you can finally track in real time which ice cream machines are broken at which McDonald's in your location. We also talk about another option for how you can view your Azure Migrate server assessments, and then we wrap up talking about a few new activities that you can monitor in your Microsoft 365 Unified Audit Log. So, Scott, have you ever gone to McDonald's desperately hoping for a milkshake or an ice cream cone, only to find that their ice cream machine was broken?
I used to work at a McDonald's when I was in high school, so I can just, like, those machines are broken all the time, and it is super disappointing when they are. Like, you're just, yeah, you're ready to go. But yeah, they do break occasionally, and it can be disappointing when that is the thing you want. You want a milkshake or an ice cream cone or whatever it happens to be.
So did you see what somebody did yesterday to solve this problem?
Yes, I did. And this is absolutely a brilliant way to approach this problem, right? I mean, it could be life-changing for somebody. So if you go to mcbroken.com, you will see in just a live map that you can scroll around on which McDonald's locations near you have a functional or non-functional ice cream machine.
Yes, and this was just fascinating that the way this guy did it. He essentially reverse engineered the McDonald's ordering app API and places an order every minute for an ice cream cone. And if the order fails, it's because the ice cream machine is broken or for some reason they don't have ice cream. And immediately everybody asks, well, is McDonald's making like thousands of ice cream cones every minute then, because these orders go in? And apparently it places the order, but the order doesn't actually get fulfilled and the restaurants don't actually receive it or receive the order to start making it based on how they're all API work. So it's essentially just a whole bunch of orders that never get fulfilled, never get charged, anything like that.
Yeah. He's basically using an internal API that's, it's an API that's not documented. So when I say internal, it's undocumented, but it is exposed to the wider world. So leveraging that API to, like you said, not execute a full order against the system, but just ping it once a minute for every single restaurant in the United States and parse that response and then turn that into a live view of the places that you can or cannot get a milkshake or an ice cream cone, which is pretty ingenious, right? And actually works by all accounts.
Yeah. And the Twitter thread, we'll put the Twitter thread to this in the show notes, is if you have a whole bunch of time, it's fascinating to go read through and enlightening about what some people think about this whole concept. But it has gotten a fair amount of attention.
It's just how much do you want to be able to have that milkshake in the morning?
Yes, absolutely. And after you do that, Scott, I have one more for you. Yeah. Have you ever wanted to go watch a movie in a theater with you and 19 of your closest friends?
Yes. And I actually did this recently, but not for, who is it who's doing it now? Cinemark in the United States is doing that?
AMC in the United States. You can now rent a movie theater for $99 for you and 20 other people to go watch a movie.
Yep.
And it's limited. They have like 20 movies you can choose from. And they're all older ones, like Shrek is in there. And I looked at the ones I'd go see with my kids.
Yeah, so we did this for, not with an AMC theater. We did this with Tenant.
Okay.
And we did it with one of the more kind of boutique theaters over here. So in Jacksonville, there's a neighborhood called Riverside. And over in Riverside, there's just a little boutique theater over there called the Sunray Cinema. And the Sunray Cinema absolutely does rent their theater out as well. So it was, it was $99 for 2 hours. You could bring up to 20 people to the theater. And Sunray has a really awesome concept concession stand. Like they'll make you not like movie theater hot dogs, but like real hot dogs. You can get burgers, barbecue. So we went and had a bunch of popcorn and beers, and it was a great, amazing experience. And you don't have to take 20 people. We went with only 4 people, and we just split that $99 cost between us, and then everybody bought their own concessions.
Right.
And there was no, like, there was no minimum food buy or anything either, okay, which was pretty cool.
So I think with AMC, you have to pay a little bit extra if you want food, and if you want some extra time to get in and out. I think they might nickel and dime you a little bit more, but I think all their theaters now here in the U.S. have, like, Lazy Boys in them. So you can just go sit, kick back, recline, watch your movie, and leave. And the price does vary based on the movie, too. So it starts at $99, and some of them are up to like $350 or $150 to $350 a movie. But yeah, it was kind of nifty.
Yeah.
I was like, this would be kind of fun to go do with some friends.
The AMC thing, it's a little limited. Like we ended up, at the time, AMC wasn't doing this. And like the cinema we went to, like I said, we saw Tenet. So it worked out awesome. Like there was no restriction on the movie. You just kind of picked it and went with it.
Got it. Yeah. I think AMC is doing it more as nobody's coming to our theaters for due to COVID. So maybe we can bring in a little extra income this way.
Well, yeah, nobody's going to your theaters due to COVID, and all the other theater chains are going out of business or suspending business.
Yes. Cause Regal has
likely going out of it.
Regal has suspended indefinitely.
Yes.
But those are my random news articles for today. One of them kind of cloud related. Maybe McDonald's could be considered cloud related. Maybe. Barely.
Kinda. Sorta. Almost.
Ish. Kinda. There's also some other cloud news that's come out that is probably more relevant to our listeners, unless they like us talking about random stuff we found.
I mean, who doesn't like a milkshake or an ice cream cone?
That's... And a movie on the big screen without buying the screen and the projector. There we are. You probably didn't get into cloud engineering to spend hours manually sifting through layers of data or manually creating reports to understand and explain your Azure costs. Neither did the IT pros at ShareGate, which is why they built ShareGate Overcast. ShareGate Overcast is an Azure cost intelligence tool that reduces manually monitoring and helps you make cost-efficient engineering decisions. And it can help you lower your Azure bill. ShareGate Overcast scans your Azure environment daily and analyzes your cost data. It automatically identifies cost issues and gives you the insights you need to fix problems fast. Plus, with personalized cost savings recommendations, you can be sure you're only paying for the resources you need. Best of all, you can get ShareGate Overcast free. Find out more at ShareGate.com/ITPro. That's ShareGate.com/ITPro. Okay. Anyways, with that, if you are still running on-prem and you want to migrate, there was an article you sent about Azure Migrate and Power BI.
Yeah. Azure Migrate as an assessment engine. So this is the assessment side of Azure Migrate. You can feel kind of limited when you're working with that data set sometimes. Like all of a sudden you have all this aggregated data from, could be like multiple data centers or multiple workplaces, multiple workload solutions, all these things kind of aggregated into Azure Migrate. And then what do you do with it? And, you know, are you able to rationalize the workloads that are out there and the cost that surrounds those workloads based on the tooling that Microsoft has provided to you? So in the earlier iterations of Azure Migrate, that was just the dashboards that were built into the blades in the Azure portal. And over time, you could start to export that data out and get your hands on it in different ways, like export it out, get it into Excel, maybe create different pivots or things like that around it. But now some of the teams, so like the Cloud Advocate team, looks like they contributed to a new PowerShell module that they've released, which is called the Assessment. Well, it's part of a wider project, which is called the Assessment Utility. And it's a PowerShell module and a Power BI template that are meant to be complementary to the assessment solution within Azure Migrate. So what it is, it's a PowerShell module that you can run. You can extract that data using the Azure Migrate REST APIs. You're not doing like anything untoward here, right? You're just being able to authenticate to existing Azure environments, Azure subscriptions, and then you're authorized to access those Azure Migrate assessments. So as long as you have those permissions in place, you know, you'd be able to run this PowerShell module, enumerate and interrogate those REST APIs, get the data out into a place where then you can use Power BI Desktop to go ahead and load that data up. So the PowerShell module will go ahead and create some Excel workbooks. You can download a Power BI template and then ingest those Excel workbooks through Power BI. And certainly, you know, it's got a kind of simple dashboard report just built into the Power BI part of it. But now that you have all that data in Power BI, you can kind of pivot on it however you'd like, super quick.
Right. So this doesn't add any new data to it or go out and grab a bunch of data that you didn't have access to before. And it's not really giving you any live data where it's going to automatically refresh. It's just a way to go grab the data that was there before, grab the data that was used for the Azure Migrate dashboards, export it to Excel, and visualize it however you want to rather than the way Microsoft might think you want to.
Yes, that's exactly it. It's just more flexibility in, yeah, how you visualize that data and how you might turn around on it. Like Azure Migrate's awesome. Like the assessment solution part, if you're doing maybe like a single workload, like, oh, I've got this multi-tier web application and, you know, I want to move that over and figure out what the database is doing and the API tier and the web tier. Or, you know, I've got my Citrix environment and it's, you know, this constrained thing with X number of servers, like whatever that is, right? I've got all these file servers out there and I just want to bring them over to IaaS. Like all those kinds of like constrained workloads, like that stuff's pretty easy to handle. But once you start to mix and mingle like 10,000 servers at once and then try and rationalize that, that can be a little bit harder. So tooling like this just helps keep that moving forward.
Yeah. Like the example here they're showing is not small. It's like, who knows who migrated this, but it's 37,000 servers with 40,000 cores and all the memory, it says 6.5 megabytes of, or no, 6.5, is that 6.5 million megabytes of memory?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a lot of memory. But yeah, analyzing something like that, there may be all kinds of different ways you'd want to slice and dice that and view it in different views. And like you said, pivot around the data and all that.
Yeah. I think like in some cases, you know, there's power in having just some of that data locally to look at. Like one of the cool things that Azure Migrate brings is the free dependency analysis. So using the dependency agent in Log Analytics, which normally you're charged for, it's free as part of Azure Migrate while you're in that assessment phase. But that UI in the portal or through Log Analytics, it can feel a little clunky sometimes. So now you're bringing all that data locally and you're not limited to just the visualizations that Microsoft has in the portal or even built into Power BI. Like there's that super wide community gallery of visualizations that exist out there with all the custom ones, which I think gives you a number of opportunities to be able to understand that data in a more meaningful way as you're getting ready to move it over.
Yep. Very nifty.
Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast For more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business.
So there was some other audit stuff too we were talking about. Are we done with the Azure Migrate? Is there anything else you want to talk there before I switch topics on you?
No, sorry. That was it.
So there were some updates that have come to the Office 365 audit log, the Unified Audit Log, Microsoft 365 Audit Log, whatever you would like to call this audit log.
It's the Unified Audit Log, right?
It's the Unified Audit Log,
I believe.
The official name.
Okay.
Although, if you go into the new Compliance Center and you look for it, you'll never find it because it did change names now in the Compliance Center.
The new, not old, but...
Like, not the old, but like...
Not new old or old new, the new Compliance Center?
Yeah, I keep talking a minute.
Okay.
Well, I log into my tenant and I can see... So, it used to be that when you'd go into the Compliance Center... And this is just going into another topic, but it's related. You'd see like all the options down the left side of your screen. So you can navigate down the left side and there was like Unified Audit Log or Audit Log or something there. Now to find the Unified Audit Log in the new Compliance Center, under Solutions, you have a link for Catalog and you have to go open the catalog. And then under there is just Audit by Microsoft. So it is no longer like... It doesn't say Unified anywhere, so if you're looking for Unified Audit Log, it is now just Audit by Microsoft. And then you can view it and open it, and you can pin it to your navigation. So now you can kind of pick and choose what different solutions within the Compliance Center you want to see, with Audit being one of them. I have found that pinning it to the navigation is not always sticky. Every once in a while, I go in and all of my solutions have been gone, and I have to go repin them all.
Yeah.
But
robust is what that's
but
called.
It does give you a new interface and it does also appear to be a little bit faster. However, finding activities, there's some quirky things about it that I don't like when I'm going and digging through the different activities. And yeah, it's different, but it works. And now it appears to just be called Audit in all of the labeling within your different admin centers. But all that being said, I guess back in March, and I missed this, there were some crucial security or compliance audit events that were added to this audit log. And I think it was just for E5. And I was looking through what crucial events.
Yeah, my understanding was these were just for E5s.
Yeah, so the crucial ones... Like, they kind of mix some announcements in there. In a nutshell, if you want information about who accessed an item in a mailbox, you need to buy some E5s, E5s, or E3s with compliance licenses. So yeah, those crucial events were E5s. Those were back in March. But Microsoft has added a couple new audit events that are also E5s now.
Well, they're still crucial. So
they're still crucial. Yes, they're still crucial. They're just new to crucial. Mailbox sends and search events in your mailbox are a couple new audit activities that are now tracked. And like we said, these are Microsoft 365 E5, or if you go by, no, this is Office 365 E3, or that's included with Microsoft 365 E3, or Microsoft 365 E5 compliance. So there are a couple different E5 SKUs you can get to access these crucial events. But these are interesting because now this send event actually captures details about every single message being sent out of a mailbox. It includes the internet message identifier, subject. You do have to check the actual message to find details of the recipients and get a ton of details. But you can now see through this, if there's a mailbox that all of a sudden started sending out a bunch of email in a short time frame, pull out message trace information from that audit log. Because that message ID is in there, you can write PowerShell to grab the message ID from the audit log and then run a message trace on it. So lots of options with these two events. Also something you obviously want to, if you're going to use PowerShell, you don't want to run this for like a month, especially on a really busy mailbox.
You might not want to.
That could be a lot of data. But these are a couple new interesting events that were added. And then at the bottom was a tidbit that was actually more interesting to me. and that Microsoft documentation for advanced auditing, which is also E5, discusses a 10-year retention period for audit data, which is rather significant considering that E5 licenses today are 365 days and E3s are 90 days. That's a lot more data, but it is also very welcome, although I don't know that my clients will all like that it's an E5 license, because I do have a few clients that for various legal reasons, compliance reasons, they actually want to retain unified audit log data for up to 7 years. And now the only real solution is going and export data out of the unified audit log.
Mm-hmm. And then put it someplace else, but...
And then put it someplace else. And there are a whole bunch of issues you run into with that. Because there's so much data in there, Microsoft limits how much you can query and how much you can pull at any one time.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you got to like loop through and act on continuation tokens.
Because you can only pull like 2,000 to 4,000 events per query and only 50,000 events per session. So you have to run multiple queries and multiple sessions, or multiple queries in one session and then multiple sessions. With all the data that this captures, like 50,000 events could be the course of a couple hours for some people.
Yeah. I think the good thing about longer term retention of audit logs is like the way that it's being described for this feature. So there's a call out that retaining audit logs for 10 years is going to require an additional add-on license. Like, okay, it's more storage. It's potentially more compute.
Right.
Get all that. That new license will be available in early 2021. All those good kinds of things. But they're not saying that they're going to retain it and export it out someplace else. It sounds like based on the way it's written, we'll have to see once it comes out, but it's a retain in place, which is even better because the problem with having to export all of your data out, like, yes, there were all those issues of throttles and, you know, you can only get batches of data of a certain size and, you know, a certain number of times per period. You still, like, if you wanted to query that data again later, then you had to put it someplace else that was queryable. So now it was up to you to come up with a solution and find a place to jam it in. And at least in this sense, like it looks like it'll all be in place and queryable across the data set, which is way better.
Yeah, I agree. And it's been interesting to watch this because it was Ignite now 2 or 3 years ago where originally they talked about, I don't even remember what the title of it was or what they called it, advanced usage analytics. It was something very similar to advanced audit where you were going to be able to do that. They were going to come up with a way where you could go export all your data and spin up a bunch of Azure resources and store it all that way. And I agree, for a lot of clients, this is a much better solution because they don't necessarily want to go spin up all the Azure resources and manage them and do all that. It's like, I just need the audit data there if I need it. I don't want to do all this stuff to have to maintain all of this myself. And there's some other things that it looks like they're bundling in here too. There's also going to be a high bandwidth access to the Office 365 Management Activity API. So this is where a lot of those limits we were just talking about are, where all organizations typically now fall in the same boat. And now Microsoft is setting a baseline. And that baseline is you get 2,000 requests to the Management API per minute. And then that limit's going to dynamically increase depending on seat counts, licenses, E5 licenses. And there will be a cap there, but they are increasing that bandwidth, that throttling limit for some of those larger customers that may be running queries against it, maybe actually exporting some data to do different things with it.
That'll be nice.
Yeah, this is all part of that advanced audit in Microsoft 365.
Very cool.
Yes, I agree. What else? Do you want my other article that you were like, what is that?
Usually when you start sending me things, I say, what is that? Because
that's true.
I'm removed enough from some of the Office 365 or Microsoft 365 things you get into, like Power Apps and Power Automate. Like, yeah, man, that's all you.
That's me.
Outlook add-ins are a great way to improve productivity and save time in the workplace, and Sperry software has all the add-ins you'll ever need. The Save as PDF add-in is a bestseller and is great for project backups, legal discovery, and more. This add-in saves the email and attachments as PDF files. It's easy to download, easy to install, and Sperry software's unparalleled customer service is always ready to help. Download a free trial at sperrysoftware.com, SperrySoftware.com, and see for yourself how great Save as PDF is. Listeners can get 20% off their order today by entering the code CLOUDIT. That's CLOUDIT, CLOUDIT, all one word at checkout. Sperry Software, work in email, not on email.
So, not huge news, but do you remember the Fluent UI, the Fluent framework that they made? Like, this was a big deal like a year or two ago.
I've heard of the Fluent UI and Fluent framework, but it seems to like ebb and flow, and access to controls isn't always what you'd want it to be. And maybe you just want to go with something that's not waiting on Microsoft all the time.
Yes. I agree. Well, and this was the whole one they were working on too, where like emails could dynamically change while you were looking at them and all of that. Apparently now in preview, we have modern Fluent UI controls in Power Apps.
In preview.
I have not seen these in preview. And they have links to go look at the whole Fluent UI. Essentially, what this looks like to me is as they're trying to convert all of the Office 365 stuff over to more of this Fluent UI and use the Fluent UI controls, people are like, well, now my Power Apps don't look like the rest of my stuff because I'm using Fluent UI for SPFX or for whatever else I might be doing. So now you have Fluent UI looking controls in Power Apps. Whether these are actually using Fluent UI, because it says the new modern controls are based on Fluent UI for Power Apps. Based on could mean like we're based on the look and feel, but it gives it a very, if you look at the screenshot in it, it gives your Power Apps a, oh no, those are the Canvas and Teams defaults. They don't have, oh, is that the Fluent one? See, now I got all confused. I don't know if they actually have a screenshot of Fluent in there, but.
No, I don't think they do.
Oh, there's the new app template with modern controls. That one down there. But yes, they are coming. It's just a brief news article I saw. If you want your Power Apps to be similar to everything else and use the Fluent UI, it's there in preview. However, I have not seen it in my preview tenant.
It's always good to see that stuff, like visual alignment's awesome. The thing that caught my eye in there, and it's been something that frustrates me when I'm in Power Apps, like for the few times that I do have to go in there, is like sometimes stuff just doesn't make sense. And they call out one of them, which has always been confusing to me, but toggles. So the classic toggle property when it was checked. So, I mean, it's a toggle, right? It can effectively be in like a binary state of on or off.
Checked or
unchecked. But when it was, but for the classic toggle, when it's checked, it's got a property that's named default. And that, and you have to go to the property default to see whether it's checked or unchecked. And in the new modern toggle, the check property is actually checked. That's awesome.
Yes.
All right. It's like semantically correct now. It aligns to the way we actually think about things in the real world.
Yep. And it's going to take some adjusting for all of us that have written Power Apps in the past, because I am so used to whenever I want to set the default for a control or set a control's value, a lot of times I go look for default. Now I'm going to have to keep track of all that.
Yeah, well, now you can act like you're just a regular old web developer again.
Yes, these definitely align much closer to what standard controls would or should be.
Yeah.
So that was some of it. I got Project Mocha, Scott.
Oh, yeah?
We could do a whole episode on this.
We should.
I will play with it some more because I have some initial thoughts already.
Of course you do.
I always
that's
have
what, that's what we pay you for.
Yep. I have initial thoughts, but I want to play with it a little more and get some more additional thoughts. My initial knee-jerk reaction is that it wasn't made for me and how I work, but we will see. And there's some weirdness in there that I have found that I definitely do not like. But definitely a future upcoming episode because I actually have it in my Office 365 environment. I don't have it through like the commercialoutlook.com. If I go log into webmail with my Microsoft Office 365 account, I now have Mocha to play with.
Nice.
Yeah. So future episode, We don't know which one, but it is coming, along with Azure Space, because we haven't had time to read those articles yet either. Scott, I'm detecting a key problem here. We do not have enough time.
And we've taken you into your next meeting.
Yes. All right. Well, we will talk to you later. Enjoy your weekend. And we will be back next week.
Thanks, Ben.
All right. Thanks, Scott.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.